Hey, folks, welcome back to On Texas Football. This is our way too early season preview. We're going to start with game number one, the Colorado State Rams. And we'll be doing this with all the games all throughout the offseason leading up until training camp. So let's start with the Colorado State Rams, CJ. Of course, Colorado State not considered to be one of the powerhouse teams on the Texas schedule. As a matter of fact, I looked at the SP Plus ranking for them before we had to do this this recording here, and they are 98 in SP Plus ranking. The only team on Texas schedule with a worse SP Plus ranking would be UL Monroe, who are 134th, and we'll get to them a little bit later on. Coming off a 5-7 season as well, this is a team that could have had some more wins. I mean, they had a 2-point loss at UNLV. They had a 3-point loss at Hawaii. They had an 8-point loss in double overtime. We all remember that one versus Colorado at in Boulder there on the road as well. So a 5-7 team, but played some competitive games, couldn't close out games down the stretch because they were a really, really young team, even with a really young quarterback who we'll talk about. But overall, what are your thoughts when you just got a chance to do some of the analysis and research on this Colorado State team?
Yeah, there should definitely be a talent gap between Texas and Colorado State. I think most expect that. Obviously, you brought up SP+. I'm going to bring up FPI. I mean, they're a little bit lower in that rankings as well, and that takes into account some of the true talent that's been brought in previous cycles, whether it be recruiting out of the high school ranks where you go out via the portal, which Colorado State did this past offseason as well. We'll dive into that here in a second. But FPI has them at 105 in Texas. We talked about it earlier this week, Rod. Texas sitting up at number three in that top five firmly. There's a wide gap there, and I think when you look at what Colorado State was good at a year ago versus what they're expected to be good at this year, one of those things is constant, and they're not very good at playing on the road. 1-5 a year ago, their lone win came against Middle Tennessee. So 31-23 on the road against Middle Tennessee, who, as we know, not a great program in general. So I would expect this game week one to be a game in which you see a lot of Longhorns on the field. Of course, it's going to be very hot. It's going to be at 2:30 in the afternoon. Texas is going to be rotating bodies. But I also think this is a game where Texas should be up pulling away very early in this game to ensure health and freshness going into Michigan week two. It'll be a good test. Obviously, they like to throw the ball around a good chunk. But I do like the Longhorns to win this game probably by about 4 or 5 scores.
We'll see if they can cover the spread. I believe FanDuel put out their way too early betting lines. They had Texas as a 35-point favorite in this game. So to your point about pulling away early, you're going to cover that kind of number. You got to blow them out early. So there's a huge, like you said, talent disparity. This is a team that only beat one opponent last year who finished the season with a winning record. That was Boise State. They did beat Boise State. That's kind of their big win of the season, if you will. But other than that, this is a team that struggled. And we can start on the offensive side of the ball because I think if there's anywhere they would hang their hat as a strength of this team, it would be on offense, the passing game specifically, because they got a mummy on the staff. Yeah, son of Hal Mummy, Matt Mummy is the offensive coordinator of this team. So they run, and then we know that Jay Norvell has some roots in the air raid as well. So it is an air raid-ish offense. They want to spread it out. They want to throw the football. And that's where you start when you look at the strengths of Colorado State. The Colorado State faithful, they call them BFN. Braden Fowler Nicolosi is his name, but they disperse with all that. They just call him BFN, so we'll call him BFN so I don't mess the name up. But he was a redshirt freshman last year, had a really good year for him. They an unexpected starter for him, but 62% completion percentage, over 3,400 yards passing, 22 touchdowns, 16 interceptions, but he was a young player and got better progressively as the year went on. And it's because he does have an NFL wide receiver he's throwing the ball to. And CJ, a lot of people were surprised and blown away that Torrey Horton decided to stay at Colorado State in the NIL world that we live in. And a lot of people thought, hey, man, he could even try the NFL potentially, which was also an option for him because he does have a Sunday skill set. But he decided to stay at Colorado State, not pursue a bigger platform, bigger stage, bigger program. He certainly would have been one of the most coveted wide receivers in the transfer portal. He stayed loyal to Colorado State, even with quarterback change.
Yeah, no, I'm a little surprised by that as well. We've talked about how hot the wide receiver market was this past offseason. He's certainly a guy with over 1,100 yards and almost 100 receptions that you would have expected to have a pretty sizable, you know, pushing market for him. Yep. But going to the passing game, and I got to watch a little bit of Braden Fowler Nicolosi in high school. He went to Aledo, so there's some familiarity. He's a DFW kid with a state championship, I believe, during his time at Aledo. Of course, who doesn't whenever you graduate from there? but he can sling it, right? And we know that from his numbers. I mean, almost 3,500 yards a year ago. I think right now the big thing is when I watch Braden Fowler Nicolosi is true gunslinger is the word I get. You know, he's just up there hucking. And sometimes not for the better, right? 16 interceptions. Colorado State in total a year ago had 18 interceptions, which was the sixth most of any program in all of college football a year ago. So Texas can get their hands on some footballs in week one. It's all about whether or not the opportunity in that pressure provides itself to the Longhorns, which we expect it to be ramped up this fall. So errant passes are going to be available. Opportunities to take the football away will be available. The issue is, and this will be interesting depending upon the turnover that they had at the offensive line last year, listen, they didn't allow many sacks a year ago.
Yeah,
they were, I believe, a bottom five team in terms of sacks in 2023. Only 13 allowed throughout the entire season. So what that tells me, you're allowing Braden Fowler Nicolosi to turn the ball over in a clean pocket. Which, if you muddy the waters a little bit and Texas is able to get pressure off the edge, those opportunities to take the ball away only increase. And that's where I think Texas can really, really start making life very difficult for the Colorado State offense, is with that edge pressure, whether it be a Trey Moore, a Justice Finkley, a Colin Simmons, Baron Sorrell, Ethan Burke. Those guys should be able to help out the secondary. And that was one of the biggest issues we saw a year ago was the complementary defense between the defense, the front seven and that secondary. Texas couldn't get pressure on Michael Penix in the secondary or in the pocket against Washington. What do you know? He goes for about 450 yards and a win that ends the Texas season. This should be the opposite. Texas should be able to get pressure, and they should be able to turn the football over against this Colorado State offense with BFN hucking it around a little bit.
Yeah, that's a great point, CJ. And you got to get to him before – he finds his favorite target, Torrey Horton. Just real quick to go over some stats about this dude. 575 yards of his, basically 575 of the yards that are thrown to him are under 10 yards. So we're talking about of his receiving yards were under 10-yard throws. So he's got yak ability, really good yak ability to make things happen with the ball in his hands as a ball carrier. But he also had 570 plus yards after the catch. So he's also yards after the catch in terms of him getting down the field. The one thing he doesn't do a lot of, he's 11th most in college football, by the way, in yards after the catch, like I said, 570 plus. But he also tied Malik Nabers, according to Pro Football Focus, for the fastest top speed for any wide receiver in college football last year. He forced 23 missed tackles as a runner at the ball carrier. 79.4 was his run blocking grade. That was 15th in the FBS among wide receivers. This is a guy that they don't throw the ball deep to him, even though he's a speed demon. He's a guy that can take the top off of defense with his verticality. They don't throw it deep. They were 105th in deep ball passing grade last year. They were overall, you go look at their overall passing grade, they were 99th. This year, I think they might try to move him around more. He was on the right side of the formation out wide 75% of the time. I think this year you get Matt Mumme moving him around, potentially moving him into the slot to get some more favorable matchups, make it tougher to be able to double team him and to be able to isolate him. And I think you may see him with some vertical shots downfield. They didn't do much of it. Like I said, most of the yards to him were throws under 10 yards, and his yards after the catch was a big part of his game, 11th most in college football. So that's one thing you may watch as a tendency breaker if you're watching film. Oh, you're thinking, oh, we don't have to cover the deep route against this guy. I would disagree because you just talked about it. He'll have time with this O-line. That's something to point out, too. And I love what you said about that. They're returning a lot of starters here. They returned Drew Moss. He's going to be a right guard for them. He was a right tackle last year, though. Aaron Karras, he's going to be their right tackle. Tanner Marley, he's been a multi-year starter for him. He's going to be he was a multi-year starter at left tackle for him. And Jacob Gardner is the center. Tanner Marley, by the way, is moving to left guard. He was a starter at left tackle. They're going to move from the guard, reportedly, based on what I studied this spring. And the left tackle is going to be Savion Henderson. It's going to be back at left tackle form. So the offensive line should be a strength for them, along with the passing game. It'll be a good test, early test for Texas. Not one that Texas won't be up to the task. They'll be ready for it. But it'll be a nice early test because this is a competent, capable offensive line. And as you pointed out about BFN, he's got a bit of a gunslinger, but he's got some raw talent. And they definitely have an NFL wide receiver that Texas needs to focus on in Torrey Horton. So that's what I do like about the offense. And it's an air raid offense. So Texas shouldn't be kind of shell-shocked by these concepts. These are concepts Texas has seen for a long time in the Big 12.
Yeah, definitely. I think this plays favorably into what Texas has seen from the Big 12, especially when you consider what the weakness of this team should be, and that's the interior of the defensive line. At least, maybe not the weakness, but the biggest question mark coming into the season, right? We don't know how this front seven, this rush defense, will shape up without a Byron Murphy or a Devondre Sweat. Luckily, they'll get tested a little bit with Colorado State, but it won't be a full, I would say, area of exposure going into the Michigan game. Of course, it will be a drastic change from style to style from week one to week two. Colorado State didn't really have much of a rushing game at all last year. They didn't have a running back over 400 yards. They do return a very talented running back, Justin Marshall, I want to point out. He only played in three games a year ago, Rod, but he had 57 carries for 311 yards, including a debut that almost totaled 120, I believe was a Colorado State program record. So the kid can go a little bit, right? What can he bring outside of the tackles? Because I do think Texas is going to play more towards defending the pass, kind of dropping back that linebacking group a little bit as well. If they can make things interesting early on with a couple big runs, then you'll have to respect the play action a little bit more. You'll have to keep a guy closer to the box because they do have a talented offensive line. Now, again, we did mention the level of talent, the gap in which you expect it to be between Texas and Colorado State. Again, I don't think they'll have much success in terms of what they'll be able to do offensively. But if they do find, you know, consistent rhythm in their offensive drives, I think it'll stem from success on the running game, which will then allow BFN to sit back in that pocket and huck it deep.
And speaking of hucking it deep, one of the players they're excited about who could be a deep threat for them came via the transfer portal, and you're probably really familiar with him too, just from the recruiting trail, Armani Winfield, who transferred to them from Baylor. A lot of talk about him in the offseason too, a lot of buzz about Armani Winfield. He's expected to be a starter for them. They lost a really good wide receiver, Justin Ross Simmons, a big kid, 6'3", 205. He left during spring, and he had 45 receptions for 724 yards, three touchdowns. He was expected to be their number two receiver. He left, and I think Armani Winfield is expected to replace him. They have another transfer that came in, I believe, from Washington State, Donovan Ali, who also is a receiver, got some size on, I think 6'3", expecting big things from him, but Torrey Horton, definitely the proven commodity there. Speaking as well on the transfer portal here, they also lost a former starting offensive lineman, Crespo Jacquez. He was a starter for him in 2022, had a season-ending injury in 2023, but you're certainly right. They're going to bring back experience on that offensive line, and I think that is kind of what they're going to hang their hat on, and I love what you said about, he's in my notes too, the running back, because I'm with you. I thought Justin Marshall was really impressive in those last three games. Ended up being the second leading rusher for him and ended up playing basically three games. Yeah. Didn't play a damn game until like November and ended up being their second leading rusher. So, yeah, it seems like all of the talent, the strengths on this team are pretty much isolated on the offensive side of the ball. They're hoping that on the defensive side of the ball, they can find some guys to end up being some playmakers, but they were not a very good defensive squad. Before we jump to defense, though, any other thoughts offensively? You brought up passing wise, this is a top 10, top 20 passing attack. I'm not making that up. They were top 20 in passing yards last year, top 10 in passing yards per game. What they fall off is they are not a very balanced offense, as you brought up. Rushing attack for them, I think they were 125th in the country in rushing offense last year, one of the worst in the country. And their passing game doesn't necessarily translate to points or translate to wins. They were 76th in points, 56th in total offense. So that's part of their problem. And so I heard some interviews from Jay Norvell, and he's saying, hey, man, we got to get our passing game to help boost our running game. We got to have more complementary, sometimes by the way, more complementary elements to our offense rather than we can chunk it, we can throw it. It got to be more complementary. So all facets and elements of the offense are helping boost one another. That's their ultimate goal.
Yeah, final thoughts here. Is that wide receiving group, you mentioned Donovan Ollie, Amari Winfield, and of course, Torrey Holton. Those bigger wide receivers, right? They range anywhere from 6'1 to 6'3. They don't really have that speedy slot that Texas has deployed, whether it be a Xavier Worthy. This year it'll be a Silas Bolden. They got big bodies out there. They'll be down the field deep ball threats. Again, that's going to be the question for me is, where does Texas match up with their specific personnel, right? Do you go out and you just man them up, say, BFN, you beat us by yourself? I think that would be the approach that I'd take, but I'll be interested again to see if that is what Texas does, because they don't have a rushing game, at least not one that can hurt Texas off the bat. They didn't have a rusher over 400 yards a year ago. Make BFN sit in the pocket and just go from read one to read two to read three. That's then how you create those takeaways and get the ball in short fields.
Totally agree. One other little nugget here, since you just brought it up, size got me thinking about another player who was mentioned in some of their spring breakdowns from spring football this year for Colorado State. They got a tight end coming in. Jackson Warren is his name. He's 6'7", 6'7", 250 at tight end. Apparently was a former quarterback prospect that Matt Mummy recruited, who's joining them. He had offers from Oregon State, from SMU. He's a really good player. They're excited about this big tight end. And they, by the way, they lost their tight end last year. One of the best tight ends in the country last year to the NFL. Went to the NFL. I think he's playing for the Saints now, if I'm not mistaken. So they know how to get their tight end the football. And if this 6'7 kid works out, that could be a matchup advantage or disadvantage for Texas if they ends up obviously matched up against the wrong person. Let's jump to the defensive side of the ball there with Colorado State. And not much to brag about defensively, Colorado State. You're talking about a group that was among the worst in the country in several areas. 108th in the nation in pass defense, 98th in rush defense, 107th in total defense, 98th in scoring defense. They struggled. And actually, I think they actually had some pretty good players in the back end. There are two safeties I really liked. His name is Jack Howell and Henry Blackburn are the two safeties. Now, you don't want your safeties to be getting 114 tackles and 75 tackles. That's a lot. Last line of defense shows you that they work a lot. That means the teams are breaking through the first and second line of defense too much. But they are very active. They make a lot of plays. I like Jack Howell, 50 solo tackles last year. I'm a big fan of Henry Blackburn in his game. I think their safeties actually may be two of their, if not their two best players on defense, maybe the two safeties for them.
Yeah, especially after losing Muhammad Kamara from a year ago, Rod, he was their best player, right? 17 tackles for loss, 13 sacks. The Dolphins ended up picking him up this spring, but that was basically their one way to create negative plays. Aside from that, they really didn't do a great job of that. You mentioned Chase Wilson. He was your one guy that was able to get into the backfield. He had 8.5 tackles for loss. No one else on this team had over 5 a year ago, at least not returning into 2024. So, without Kamara, and if Chase Wilson is not able to get up into that blitzing areas, where does Colorado State kind of create that pressure? Right now, I don't see anybody on that roster who I'm necessarily game planning against. They don't have a Colin Simmons. They don't have a Trey Moore, an Ethan Burke right now that I've got to sit back and say, all right, when 99's on the field, we got to chip in. We got to keep that tight end. We got to side a running back over. We got to chip. Right now, listen, I think Newer Getkoth, excuse me if I'm pronouncing these names incorrectly, in Wakalonji, again, they got some tough edge rushing names, that's for sure. But Listen, they're talented ball players, but I don't think they provide that quickness off the edge that we saw last year with Kamara. Kamara, again, was their best defensive player. 17 tackles for loss in a single season, that's tremendous. Right there alone tells you he lived in the backfield. I don't see the pressure being that much of an issue for this Texas offensive line, especially with what they return with four offensive linemen coming back, Cam Williams walking into that right tackle spot. This should be a nice tune-up game for the Texas offensive line in terms of what they will face going into week two against Michigan.
Yep, I'm with you on that. And like I said, I think all the strength of it, I don't really like their defensive line much. Their defensive front, as you pointed out, you do have Chase Wilson. But I think Don Jones is a good player at the cornerback position for him. He's got two interceptions, three PBUs. So their strength is probably in their secondary, not on the defensive line. There's another cornerback who was a transfer from Nevada who I was told to keep an eye on. I'm going to mess his name up, Isaiah Esesima. And he's from the Houston area, actually. Originally was at Wake Forest, then transferred to Nevada. I'm told that the coaches really like him as well. They need to replace obviously some pivotal pieces in that secondary. But look for – there's two safeties. One's a captain in Henry Blackburn and Jack Howe, really to be the two difference makers for him. And they don't really offer much, I'm with you, on the defensive front other than their linebacker, Chase Wilson. But they can't – it can't be as bad or worse than they were last year. So I think they'll be improved just somewhat because I think Jay Norvell will help his defense with a running game. I think that's their goal. Get a running game. That'll help us control the game, and that'll have our defense less exposed out there on the field. All right. So, that's our breakdown of Colorado State. Way too early breakdown of Colorado State. We'll be doing Michigan next week. Way too early. But, of course, it's always football season right here on Texas Football. For my man C.J. Vogel, for myself, Lifetime Longhorn Rod Babers, and for the On Texas Football family. Until next time, hook 'em.